Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 12, 2020. The United Nations condemns an attack on aid workers in South Sudan.
The NGO, a UN partner, were on their way to the Lasu settlement hosting refugees from DRC and Sudan to provide health, nutrition, and hygiene services. The two vehicles, a van and an ambulance, were carrying 15 passengers, 11 staff, and 4 patients at the time of the attack.
And suspects escaped from a military custody in Juba.
We, on the prosecution side, came to know through the court that the prime suspect, the accused, who has willingly confessed to the court that he is the one who killed the deceased, has escaped from the prison.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has condemned an attack on a humanitarian convoy delivering aid to displaced people in Yei County of Central Equatoria State on Monday. The convoy was on its way to Lasu settlement, hosting refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Sudan. The convoy was carrying health, nutrition, and hygiene services. Two vehicles were carrying 15 passengers and 11 staff, plus 4 patients. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
In a statement released on Tuesday, the United Nations Interim Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, Olusayo Oluo, strongly condemned the unprovoked attack and called on authorities to take immediate action. Andrea Noyes, deputy head of UN OCHA in South Sudan, says a convoy of 2 vehicles belonging to an international NGO came under attack at Abegi, 16 kilometers from Yei town, while on its way to a refugee settlement.
The NGO, a UN partner, were on their way to the Lasu settlement hosting refugees from DRC and Sudan to provide health, nutrition, and hygiene services. The 2 vehicles, a van and an ambulance, were carrying 15 passengers, 11 staff, and 4 patients at the time of the attack.
Noyes says the unidentified attackers opened fire on the vehicles, both clearly marked with the Red Cross logo and emblem.
The driver of the first vehicle was shot and injured, yet managed to keep driving and escape. The second vehicle, an ambulance, was forced to stop and the passengers fled into the nearby bush. All the passengers of the convoy were later accounted for. The ambulance was looted of medical and nutritional supplies by the armed group.
Noyes says it has become more challenging for humanitarians to reach the neediest South Sudanese due to escalating violence in parts of the country. She says even though road ambushes on civilian vehicles is nothing new on the Yei-Lasu road, this is the first attack on a humanitarian convoy since 2018.
This is unacceptable. I strongly condemn the unprovoked ambush on a convoy with both vehicles clearly marked by the NGO logo on the van and a visible red cross on the ambulance. Those responsible should be brought to justice.
Noyes says the ambush leaves thousands of refugees at the Lasu settlement without desperately needed medical supplies and services. Recent clashes in Central Equatoria State between rebel fighters loyal to Thomas Cirilo and government forces has displaced thousands of civilians from their homes. In late June, gunmen killed an aid worker in Kyebet County, Lakes State, who was driving a clearly marked ambulance that was transporting a gunshot victim to a hospital following intercommunal violence in Kyebet County. Abegi area where the attack took place is under government control. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A prime suspect in the murder of a University of Juba lecturer who was shot dead in Juba in Gudele's residential area in January this year has escaped from prison. The suspect has appeared before a court-martial 13 times before his escape from a military detention in Juba. Relatives of the deceased accused military officials at the detention facility of helping the suspect to escape. The spokesperson for the South Sudan Defense Force confirms 2 prisoners escaped from a military prison, but says those who escaped are not connected with the killing of the University of Juba lecturer. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
As the 13th session of court-martial proceedings were about to begin today in Juba, Judge Major General of Police Stephen Warkozy asked for the whereabouts of John Makur, the prime suspect in Bolshoi's murder. To the surprise of many who were present in the courtroom, soldiers informed the court that the suspect had escaped from the detention facility on Monday. John Jok Matiop, a lawyer for the prosecution, says relatives of the deceased had no idea Makur was a fugitive until today.
We on the prosecution side came to know through the court that the prime suspect, the accused, who has willingly confessed to the court that he is the one who killed the deceased, has escaped from the prison. We felt so shocked about the news. And not only us, even the court itself was shocked.
Police arrested Makur and three other suspects in February in connection with Chol's murder. Makur had appeared before the general court-martial 12 times over the last 6 months. Relatives of the deceased say they are mystified as to how the suspect could escape from the highly protected military prison. Speaking in Dinka, Magog Mabior, a brother to the deceased, says the facts don't add up.
The way he escaped is surprising. He escaped and the door of the prison was not broken, and that was at the military intelligence prison where he escaped. He has escaped with the two people and only one suspect has remained. We don't know how he escaped. The director of the prison must know how he escaped.
Matiop says the Special General Court Martial has ordered Colonel Peter Agwang Ding, the director of the prison, to appear before the court and answer some questions.
The court has adjourned and ordered the person in charge of the prison to be brought to appear and explain to the court officially how this prime suspect escaped from the prison. So on Friday, we are coming back for the same litigation, and the director for the prison will come and explain to the court the circumstances that must have led to the escape of the prime accused.
Colonel Ding is being investigated over Makur's escape, according to a military official at the prison who spoke on condition of anonymity. South Sudanese have complained for years that criminals are often arrested and later released without being punished for their wrongdoing. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
Traders and residents in Bor say prices of food commodities have skyrocketed after floods destroyed crops and made roads impassable. A 25 kilogram of beans, which used to cost 10,000 South Sudanese pounds 2 weeks ago, now costs 13,000 South Sudanese pounds. Traders say they increased the prices to keep their businesses running as the market is likely to run out of goods very soon. Traders in Bor Market get their supplies from Juba by road. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Prices of maize flour, beans, cooking oil and other food commodities have shot up in Bor's Maror market since flooding devastated the area 2 weeks ago. Speaking in Dinka, trader Mabur Kuala Juk, who owns a grocery shop in Bor town, says he had to raise the price of a 25-kilogram sack of beans from 10,000 South Sudanese pounds to 13,000 South Sudanese pounds to cover its cost.
The flood has actually destroyed the businesses in the way that if you look at the market now, there are few shop operating. This is because some have closed. For example, the whole of Marantu market is closed. And as the result, the price have been increased.
Ajuk says if the floods do not subside soon, most traders will run out of stock, which will cause prices to go even higher.
If the situation continues like this for long, I'm worried there will be nothing to buy it in the market. The only option now left the river and the air transport, which are very expensive in this case, resulting to her or river transport later when lead to more hike in price.
Ajok says he was forced to raise prices to stay in business. Speaking in Dinka, Jonglei State Chamber of Commerce Deputy Secretary Ayuin Kur agrees traders had no other option but to increase prices after the floods.
Yeah, kitchen price
flood has made the road impossible, so there is no supply to the market. This has made available good not sufficient, leading to hike in prices. Two, if a trader get lost in any disaster like this flood, then that has destroyed the shop with good. The trader at the loss on the price of the available good.
Boris Denaliwanyet says the skyrocketing prices are causing more suffering for people who are dealing with aftermath of the floods.
They are increasing the price of food items every day. You can go to market and get this 5 liters oil for cooking. The price has reached to 2,500 or 3,000 in other stock. They flooded maize floors, and the sorghum itself become very rare in the market. And this one now become worse to IDPs, those who are running away from the houses in the village. So this one needs intervention of a state chamber of commerce and with government.
Residents like Anyet are pleading with state and national officials to intervene and provide immediate aid to those affected by the Boer floods before things get any worse. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Boer.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are youth doing on this International Youth Day? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control
And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Today is International Youth Day, and according to the International Labour Organization, at least 800,000 young Kenyans enter the labour market every year, as youth unemployment is estimated to be as high as 35% compared to the overall national unemployment rate of 10%. As Maureen Ojiambo reports for VOA from Nairobi, the COVID-19 pandemic has made thousands of young Kenyans jobless.
Today's celebrations for the International Day for the Youth will not be as usual due to COVID-19 pandemic. This year's theme is Young Engagement for Global Action, that seeks to highlight the ways in which the engagement of the young people at the local, national and global levels is enriching national and multilateral institutions. However, Kenyan youth feel there is nothing to celebrate about, as joblessness is the order of the day. Fabian Kalabai is a Kenyan youth who graduated 5 years ago. He has never been employed in his field of expertise, and says that the government does not do much to ensure young people get jobs to sustain themselves.
I've been unable to secure a job for the past 5 years now in this country. The government tends to be not committed to the concerns of the youth in terms of ensuring that they get the necessary and available opportunities. In most government parastatals and in other organizations, the government tends to recycle the old people. They are moving from one parastatal to another department in the government, whereby the youth are being sidelined.
The government of Kenya is trying to ensure youth secure job opportunities that could help young graduates boost their skills by providing internships. However, Dan Rogo, a youth representative in Nairobi, said that Kenyan youths are facing a lot of challenges that make the young people achieve less in the society.
The challenges remains the same. Poverty, underemployment, massive exclusion, violence that are meted to young people in their homes. This has remained a headache when you talk about the achievements and what young people are really able to be proud of at this International Youth Day. And I think these are things that needs to be discussed in the context of globalization.
Due to massive job losses in the country brought about by COVID-19 pandemic, the Kenyan government has embarked on initiatives that will see youths benefit from. Chief Executive Officer National Youth Council Roy Telewa said that the government has come up with initiatives that will see the young people sustain themselves.
When you look at what the pandemic has caused to the not only Kenya, but the world at large, it has posed a great challenge to the livelihoods of young people and in terms of business. And the biggest major concern to us as young people is how will our economy recover? We've looked at the issues of policies. In terms of skills, we've looked at technical and vocational skills to just make sure that we prepare our young people ready for the job market.
According to the International Labour Organization, more than 64 million youths globally are unemployed, and at least 145 million young workers are living in poverty. The ILO says youth unemployment remains a global challenge and top policy concern as the world marks International Day for the Youth. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
And here in the United States, the Democratic presidential ticket is set with Joe Biden picking his running mate. AP Washington correspondent Shagai Megani reports.
For the first time, a major party's ticket has a black woman. Biden has tabbed California Senator Kamala Harris to run with him, calling her one of the nation's finest public servants. Harris tweets she's honored and that Biden can unify the American people. Former President Obama is among those hailing the choice, saying Biden, his former vice president, nailed the decision. President Trump quickly tweeted a campaign ad dismissing Harris as a phony, and one that said the Democratic ticket jointly embraces the radical left. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
still in the United States, Kamala Harris joins Joe Biden in the 2020 race at a moment of unprecedented national crisis with the coronavirus pandemic and the economic issues it has created, along with unrest across the country as Americans protest racism and police brutality. The protests are in their third month, and while demonstrations are smaller, they are not slowing down. VOA's Jason Patenkin and Ayen Dengbior reports from Washington.
What do we want? What do we want it?
Now!
When we go get it?
It's been more than 2 months since the United States erupted in protests following the death of African-American man George Floyd in police custody. Since then, millions have marched in cities across America demanding an end to systemic police brutality and racism. Some of the largest protests took place in the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C. Thousands marched here despite police at times firing tear gas, stun grenades, and other projectiles at largely peaceful crowds. While protests here are smaller now, numerous demonstrations still take place each weekend demanding prosecution of abusive police officers and defunding or abolishing of police departments. On a recent Saturday, over 100 protesters gathered at DuPont Circle in the heart of the nation's capital. They are mostly young and of many different races. One protester holds a sign that says Breonna Taylor was murdered in reference to a black woman shot and killed in her sleep this March by police officers in the U.S. state of Kentucky. The protester holding the sign is a white man who declines to give his name.
People are now more resolved because we're all still out here. It seems like the people who are still present are... They're ready to see change. They're willing to. They don't care if they bring pepper spray. They don't. They probably would stay if they brought live ammunition, to be honest. It's because I know that when people see and hear the truth about what really happens out here, there's no way they wouldn't stand with us. There's no way that they wouldn't agree that these policemen have too much power and that they're the tip of a very long systemic racism spear. And we got to start with the tip, take it down so that we can get the rest of it done.
Another protester is 26-year-old black woman Jasmine Nicole. She says she joins the protests to show solidarity with demonstrators in Portland, Oregon, where thousands have taken to the streets to protest violence by local and federal police.
I'm here to stand in solidarity with Portland, but also because we have local issues here in D.C. So we're saying George Floyd and we're saying Breonna Taylor, but we also have local names to say.
Police in Washington, D.C. have killed 13 people since 2015, according to a Washington Post database. 12 of those killed were black. Nicole says protests in D.C. have changed over the past 2 months.
There's definitely been a fluctuation of the crowd. Sometimes it'll be a few people or a large crowd. I will say the crowds have gotten smaller, so I'm happy to see so many people out here tonight. And I've also seen more protests other places, like to urge the D.C. City Council to follow through on the demands that we're saying out here in the streets. So I've seen like more protests in different places.
Before sunset, the protesters block an intersection to read names of people killed by police.
Jane Thompson was murdered.
Jane Thompson!
Then they walk through a public park where dozens of city residents are relaxing. The protesters say they want to disturb people from their recreation into taking action. A few people in the park get up and leave, but most sit and listen to the protesters. Some raise their fists in support. After dark, the march moves onto a highway, blocking all cars except emergency vehicles, like this ambulance. The protesters sit down in the highway to rest, drink water, and eat snacks. Dion Antoine Ingram is a black man in his late 30s.
Not just shooting by the police.
He says he's protesting to force changes to the U.S. criminal justice system, which the Institute for Crime and Justice Policy Research says incarcerates more people per capita than any other country.
I have uncles, I have cousins who all did time in the justice system. You know what I mean? I'm talking about nonviolent crimes. 20, 30 years, nonviolent crimes. You know what I mean? So my family, my loved ones, has all been molested by the criminal justice system. Treated poorly, treated unfairly, mistreated. You know what I mean?
Ingram says he is impressed to see people of all races joining the protests.
I've been down here for basically like 41 days every day. and the diversity out here, the love, the unity, it means so much to me.
After their rest, the protesters leave the highway and march on through city streets. They'll do it again next weekend, as long as it takes, they say, for their demands to be met. With my VOA colleague Ian Bior, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Relatives of a murdered University of Juba lecturer are accusing military prison officials of helping the prime suspect escape from a Juba detention facility 2 days ago. Lecturer Bol Chol was shot and killed in Juba's Gudel neighborhood January 12th, when the 13th session of court-martial proceedings against John McCorr was about to begin today. Judge Stephen Warzaki was informed by soldiers that McCorr was missing. Prosecuting attorney John Jogmatyab says Chol's relatives were never told that McCorr was a fugitive until today. Police arrested McCorr in February. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has condemned Monday's attack on a humanitarian convoy that was delivering aid to displaced people in central Equatoria State's Yei County. An OCHA official says the assailants injured the driver and looted the vehicle's medical supplies. The UN called on South Sudanese authorities to take action. Andrea Noyes, deputy head of UN OCHA in South Sudan, says two vehicles with an international NGO were attacked 16 kilometers from Yei town. Noyes says both vehicles were clearly marked with the Red Cross logo and emblem, and that it's become more challenging for humanitarians to reach South Sudanese in need because of stepped-up violence in parts of the country. And finally, residents and traders in Bor say food prices in Morol Market have skyrocketed after floods there destroyed crops and many roads impassable. Most of Bor's main market is closed following the floods. Trader Mabior Kual Ajok, who owns a grocery store in Bor town, says he had to raise the price of a 25-kilogram sack of beans from 10,000 South Sudanese pounds to 13,000 pounds in order to cover his costs. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Habib Gelby by John Kuduse. Habib Gelby, and gun dar sabr, and gun dar komalela. Habib Gelby, and gun dar sabr, gun dar komalela. Sika yiganda ke, sika yiganda ke, sika marobo kepe, and dar sabr yoganda, and dar sabr ya mama. Ender sabri ya bibi, ender sabri ya ganda. We have been listening to John Kuduse with the song Habib Gelby. I'm John Townsend, Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.